Gaming Uncensored is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
Controlling transmission.
Divided by 1,000 miles of barren wasteland, two men mysteriously linked by alien technology on a podcasting mission to boldly deliver video game news and views directly to your brain. This is Gaming Uncensored. And now, your Gaming Uncensored guides, the dynamic duo, the video game gurus, a man on wheels, and a Yeti with a modem, Jamie and Tommy.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. How you doing? My name is Jamie Jordan, and this is a brand new, barely working episode of Gaming Uncensored. And Tommy's sitting over there. What's up, man?
We are in like duct tape and wire mode keeping this together right now. It is something trying to figure out a new way to record this show with video, which you may or may not see. Let's just candidly here, video may not happen because we are trying something new because the service we previously used started charging us more money than we wanted to pay. So we're trying something to not have to pay that money and it could fail miserably. But you're hearing the podcast, so that's good news.
We are MacGyvering this sucker is what is happening.
Yes, very much so.
If you're too young to know what MacGyver is, do not watch the reboot. Go find the original. The reboot sucked.
Yeah, the original is so good. I miss MacGyver. MacGyver was fabulous. So
it was my favorite show when I was about 8.
Yes.
And it's still good.
It's still good. It's cheesy as all get out, which makes it all that much better in retrospect. And so that said, otherwise, things are going good. How you doing, man?
I'm good. What is on the show this week, sir?
We got Fallout again because we got finished talking about Fallout because we've now both watched all the way through the series. And no surprise, there's still a couple of Fallout news-related things that we'll hit on as well. We've got some Switch 2 rumors. We'll see if we get to an interesting story out of Japan about Gen Z and their gaming habits. This is something that I kind of feel I hope we get to that one because it's just fascinating to talk about gamer habits and what different generations and how different generations play games and what that means for the future of games and all that fun stuff. So, more stuff we won't get to for sure. So go to GamingUncensored.com to see the show notes that we didn't get to.
We have got lots and lots to talk about and a lot has happened since the last time we did a show. I have new artwork up in the studio. I have fancy speakers up in the studio.
Yeah.
Which we're going to have a lot of fun with as soon as I can drag Tommy down here. We got lots and lots of things going on, and I will talk about that at some point. Do you want to do that now?
Go for it.
Okay. Yeah. So, two things. One, I have to say thanks to Doug at Lubbock Audio Visual for doing all of the hard work, which basically means he crawled around the attic and did the wiring right. You're welcome, sir.
Yes, I am very appreciative of that personally.
Yeah, I knew you would be. So Doug has the speakers up. The receiver is working. It sounds fabulous. It will go much louder than you and I will ever need it to go. And I'm really, really happy. And this afternoon, in a couple hours, we're going to get a ceiling fan put up in this room so that you don't die while you're here.
I also very much appreciate that.
Because it is a little warm in here when yes. everything's running. So
as well it should be. I mean, yes. that makes sense, but the ceiling fan's going to be a big help.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge deal. Very, very excited. I said it on Patreon, but you guys are what made this happen. This is all about you guys, and we could not have done this without your help and support. And hopefully, if we did everything right, what it means is more, at least average content for you. Yes. I'm not going to say that any of it is going to be good, but there should be more content of some kind at some point.
Yeah. I think that's fair, and I think that's a good way to caveat it. Yeah. We'll give you at least more average content.
Yeah.
It's the best we could hope for at this point, but we could do that.
That's what we do.
Yes.
We've made an art form for the last 19 years out of making average content.
Yes.
That apparently lots of people seem to enjoy. We always say that there are people lurking around who have listened to this show forever that we know nothing about. And yes. I put pictures up on Twitter, and I got a DM from a friend of mine. Well, I say a friend of mine, I have no clue who he is. but he just sent me a message, and he was like, "Yo, I've been listening to you and Tommy since like 2010. And my response was, "Why don't we know who you are?"
Yeah.
And his Twitter handle is Gio from CO on Twitter. I kid you not.
Nice.
Gio from CO. So what's up, buddy? Yeah, that's what I do, is shout out random people on the show. And to anybody else that is listening and we have not heard from you, we would very much like to hear from you.
Yes.
Because
it is... It's a weird thing that most of the people that listen to this show, we have no interaction with. Like, there's a core group of people that we get to talk to and interact with on a regular basis, which is super cool. And we love that. But it's just a weird thing to think about us talking to a lot of people who we just have no clue are listening to our voice. And so if you are one of those people and would just like to interact with us, like, come on.
Yeah,
talk to us. Send absolutely. Us an email, hit us up on the Facebook group or Twitter or all the ways that we're old men.
Yeah.
Because we're not on Instagram or TikTok or that kind of stuff because we're old men and just not that cool. If you want to do any of that stuff for us, we'll let you.
I'm on Instagram.
Right.
I've been putting show stuff on Instagram.
Nice.
So, like he said, if somebody wants to help us with the show Instagram, we would love to have your help with that. Because let's be honest, we're not going to do it.
No.
On that vein, I have to say, it looks really bad. So if you want to get a good look at what I'm fixing to say, it is on the social medias. It's on the Patreon. But behind me, you can sort of vaguely see a hand-drawn picture of Link trying to get out of a scary, scary place. And that is a piece of art that I bought at the Yellow City Comic Con last week from my new friend, Mr. Jonathan Miller on Instagram. He is an artist from Dallas who does a lot of really cool hand-drawn, fresh from his imagination art, which I think is awesome. And I hope we can maybe get to do a little work with him.
For sure.
Because I think he's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, the artwork is awesome. So, and cool that he's local to me.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, we'll definitely have to connect and get some stuff going there.
Yep. Absolutely. So we got a lot of stuff going on. I never really thought about how much content there is available for you and I to consume until I got a man cave to consume it in. And then I started looking around and I was like, okay, how am I going to watch all of this crap?
Yeah.
So I've done lots of things. I've seen you play Rebirth in the man cave. I've watched Fallout. I have been watching NBA playoffs.
Nice.
I haven't gotten around to baseball yet. I'm saving the baseball for when you're here.
Yeah.
Because I think we're going to get you a comfortable spot, and you're not going to want to leave.
I think that's fair.
If I can put the Astros on the TV.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else? There's just a whole bunch of stuff, and I have no idea how I'm going to get to all of it.
Yeah,
so
for sure. And it's the brilliance and the struggle of living in 2024 is we have all the content, and there's just way too much for us to enjoy. I just saw that Jedi Survivor is on Game Pass. I'm like,
When
in the world am I going to play that? But man, I want to play that, and it's just like. Constant. It's just a barrage of content that we need to consume, and just we got to pick and choose, which is tough.
One thing on that I have to mention is I'm going to take like a minute on this, and then I'm not going to speak on it for the rest of the show. Our buddy Logan bought me Cilantro. That's actually how you say it.
There you go.
I found the guy on YouTube. And that apparently it's called Cilantro, and I've spent about 20 minutes with it, and I want to throw the computer out the window. I don't understand. I don't get it. I know you're digging it, but I think I need a tutor.
Yeah. I mean, so last time we talked about it, that you don't have a lot of poker experience.
I don't. Yeah.
And that's the first thing, is that just not having poker experience is going to make the game significantly harder because it just assumes that you know basic poker hands and kind of that kind of stuff. And so that's the first thing. It's just getting the grasp on basic poker hands, kind of how, like, the big thing is understanding how common they are, how much, you know, like, how common is a flush, which that's the thing with Cilantro is, like, if you want to be okay at it, but difficult to be great at it, it's, like, focus on flushes. And you can get a long way with just, like, trying to get flushes, which five cards of the same suit. And if you just do that for a while and kind of figure out how the rest of the game works, it'll probably make it make more sense, and then you can kind of start trying to figure out other hands.
That's all I need is somebody on YouTube to tell me is focus on a flush. And I have watched like four different videos trying to figure out how to play this game. And everybody just sort of assumes that you know, you played poker.
Right.
Because I think most people have, but like my hands don't work. So, yeah.
So that's where I'd say start. It's not going to get, it's like the problem with that strategy is like once you get deeper into a run, like flushes stop being as effective. You can win a whole run with flushes. I've done that before, but it's really hard. You got to have some kind of diversification in the type of hands that you play and level up different hand types and that kind of stuff. Cause the boss antes will debuff certain hands or suits or that kind of stuff. Like it all gets like very in the weeds. But just to get like your head wrapped around the game, like just try to get flushes early on. And I think that will at least get you moving in the right direction where you go, oh, okay. I kind of get the flow of this and how it works. And like, I mean, most roguelikes just throw you into it and you're kind of like, what am I doing? Oh, I died. You know, this is very similar, even though it's not twitchy, which a lot of roguelikes obviously are very twitchy. We've talked about before. But this one, even not being twitchy, like you're still like, oh, okay, this is cool. Oh, I game over. Like it just like happens and you go, okay, start over. And like, it's you got to be a glutton for punishment in order to like really get into a roguelike. But the thing is once you start getting a little bit of success, then you want more success, and it just hooks its talons into you in such a way that you can't let it go. And it just like, I'm still going back to it. I'm like, this game is dumb at this point, and I'm still wanting to play it all the time.
So the little guy, part of the reason I'm frustrated, the little mascot guy.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that really bothers me is that he just insults you all the way through. and like I said, it would be different if I had any clue what I'm doing. I don't, and so I'm really trying to figure it out, and I need Bellatro for Dummies is war, yeah. Or poker for dummies.
That's what I was going to say is, yeah. What you need to do is just go find some video poker online to play for a little bit, just to like play some just five card draw. Like that's what you need to know. Like you don't need to get into like Texas Hold'em or anything like that. You just need five card draw to get the kind of how Bellatro works. And then like, then you can get into the jokers and the mults and how like all the different like tarot cards work and all that stuff, which is, you know, just takes time of like playing around with them and experimenting and that kind of stuff to figure out combinations and stuff. But yeah, I mean, the first thing is just getting that kind of basic poker experience under you. And then we can play poker sometime. Yeah, which would be fun.
That would be fun. So all of that to say, Logan, I really appreciate you. And I also really hate you at the same time.
While we're on that, just really quickly, because Logan is on the list of our Patreon supporters. Big thanks, Cabbage, Jose, Narkduff, Josh, Hector, Spider, Spencer, Kavash, Chad, Zeke, Chris, Brigham, Sam, Andrew, Luik, Logan, Liz, and Jordan. Making sure we get you guys in there, your shout out on the show. If you'd like to support us on Patreon, you can do that. Go by gamingUncensored.com and click that Become a Patron link there near the top of the page. We will happily take your money and play some games. Or, you know, if you want to be like Logan, just send us games directly. Just yes. Cut out the middleman. That works too.
Yes. real quick before we get to the Fallout, I want to talk to you about one other gaming thing, which I think you will find interesting because it has to do with your job. Mm. I haven't had a lot of time because I've been trying to work bugs out and various things, but I have had about an hour to play Cyberpunk on the new fancy surround sound system, and it's real good. And where this applies to your job, and maybe you can talk about this, about how the brain works. Since I have started playing Cyberpunk on the system with this good audio and having things all around me and things behind me and whatnot, I am seeing things in Cyberpunk that I would swear to you were not there. Like stuff floating in the like ceiling fans and stuff floating in the air. And like, and it's all about now that the brain has that audio, it's filling stuff in. And so I'm going to give you about a minute here to be a professor of audio production and just explain a little bit about how cool that is, because it really does make a difference.
Yeah, it's the kind of basics of sound design, that the idea of film or video games or whatever it is, that sound is half of the experience, and arguably even more than that. Our senses are all so intricately tied together. Like none of them exist in their own compartment. Like there's so much overlap. We talk about this all the time with like taste and smell, that so much of your sense of taste comes from your sense of smell. So much of your sense of perception is not just what you see, but also of how you hear stuff, and that affects how you see. There's this really, you got me going now. So just, yeah. You asked for it. There's this really cool phenomenon called the McGurk effect. Go look it up sometime. That's like how you can even use that connection between your hearing and your vision to like fool the mind. That we are really susceptible to being tricked by audio and visual things not aligning properly because we want to make them align. Our brain knows that there should be a connection between what we see and what we hear. And so it looks for that all the time to the point that it can trick us, that we can look at something that is wrong and believe it, even though we know it's wrong because our brain is trying to make that connection. But it works the inverse too. These little details that you didn't hear before now bring out the things that you're seeing because you hear them. Like it gives you that auditory clue that that thing exists in the world. And you go, oh yeah, look at that. There's this super cool thing. And where immersive sound makes the game immersive visually. Like those things have to go together because that's how our brain works. That's how we experience the world around us all the time. And so the more audio fidelity you get, the more visual fidelity you're going to get because you see things that you wouldn't otherwise see.
I'm telling you, and I'm not saying this as an idiot with a really nice sound system in his house. If you ever get to play a game, especially like Cyberpunk, with really good sound, you need to do it. Because I'm telling you, it's a completely different experience. Completely different. Like, I feel way more immersed, and this is going to sound stupid, but this screen that I'm sitting in front of right now, looking at your face, when I turn on Cyberpunk with the good sound, the screen feels bigger.
Yeah.
I feel like I got more screen real estate. it is the weirdest thing. And I think one of the things that you and I are going to have a lot of fun with, you being the chair of audio production at a college, is figuring out the cool little things about audio. And like, this room is good enough. I think you could probably take some video and teach some stuff that just in somebody's house that maybe not is a little different from the studio or where you might work the rest of the time. So I'm really excited because we're two audio geeks.
Yeah.
And it really comes through with something like Cyberpunk.
Yeah. Which is cool. And again, what the kind of purpose is of the new space, but the fun that is part of that as well. And so I'm excited to experience it too. So,
yeah.
That said, should we talk about Fallout for a little bit? Now that you finished it and have some thoughts, I would love to hear your thoughts.
You know, I have thought and I have thought and I have thought about what I was going to say for the last 2 weeks. And all I can really come up with is Fallout. They did a good job of capturing what Fallout is. I mean, that's really all I can say. If you have never played a Fallout game, this show is a good gateway drug, so to speak, into the Fallout universe.
Yeah.
It's not everything. And there's some things that I saw that was like, okay. But if you have never been into the Fallout universe, it's a good primer. It really is. Mm. And that's all I can really say, because it does not compare to me. Now, I'm excited to hear what you have to say. It does not compare to me to playing a Fallout game. I know it's gotten a great score on Rotten Tomatoes. I know the whole world's into it. I've had people telling me that their wives are into it, and they've never played a Fallout game in their life. They don't really play video games. And so I know it's kind of taking the world by storm, and I will call that the Last of Us effect, because I also know a lot of people watch The Last of Us that don't play video games. It's really good. I'm not going to say it's perfect, but it's really good.
Yeah, I generally would agree. I think it's really good. I don't think it's great. Yeah. Maybe it's the and I think The Last of Us is great. There's no other video game adaptation that's quite at that level. Fallout's a really good one. And the two things I think they did really well, and then I'll get into the things I don't think they did quite as well, but the two things I think they did really well, one is what we talked about before it ever came out that they had to get right, and I think they did, which is the world. They got the feel of Fallout in there, and like, it's so cool to see that represented in a live action way, which is a different experience than you get from the video games. And it feels different because of that. The other thing that I really like that the TV show did that the games just don't really have the ability to do is that it spent a decent chunk of time in the before times, right? Yeah. of giving you some history and specifically with the characters, with the ghoul and kind of giving him background, which is super important for understanding the story progression, all that kind of stuff. And so having that like flashback thing of understanding kind of the progression of Vault-Tec and what's happening and the people involved and how those people are relevant in, you know, the Fallout world 200 and whatever, 19 years later, whatever it is really, really cool. And that part of it, I think they did really well and is a different kind of story exposition than the video games do. And that's good. I don't want the video games to do that kind of story. And I don't want the TV show to do the kind of story the video games do. Like, that's okay. where they need to diverge.
I will push back on that slightly. Because what they did for me from the game perspective is I was like, at the very end, and I'm not going to say just a whole lot, but there's a lot of people involved at the very end about making these vaults happen. And if you go back and you look at the games Fallout 3 New Vegas, it's almost like they filled in a gap and you're watching that and you're like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
These people are trying to, like, you know, take over the world by fiat, essentially.
Right.
and I really thought that was really good.
Yeah, I agree. And that's, again, like, the way you could tell a different story, even though it's related to what we already know in the Fallout world, is super cool. I really like that part of it. The part that, like, just on a, like, general TV show kind of level, Fallout or anything else, I would feel this way. Like, the story's okay. Like, it's not anything that's crazy. I don't know if we want to get into spoilers or not. I'll give a slight spoiler alert warning here, but I think most people probably already caught up. If not, go catch up or beware. There is a twist, and you know, there's a twist that's going to come, and the twist is not all that surprising. It's a twist that's very Fallout-like, and Fallout isn't like, the games don't do like twists that are like super surprising. No. they're pretty predictable. And the nature of the story is very like 2020s prestige TV of like focusing on like these two characters and their journey and how they cross and intersect and go. Like, that's something that we see all the time right now in like modern television storytelling. And what it does, in my opinion, and I'm curious to see if you agree or if you're going to push back on this, but to me, it makes the world seem smaller, that like the narrative around a lot of things in the show made the world not seem as big as I feel like it could have been. And the wasteland to me is obviously sparse, which it, like, there's a difference here between like density and size, right? Wasteland isn't dense, but it's big. And I just didn't ever get that feeling of it feeling really big
What's lacking is you didn't ever feel like they had to walk for days to get somewhere.
Yeah, and there's no sense of, like, and they tried to do that with, like, some of the, like, Lucy's super thirsty at one point, you know, and just desperate and goes and drinks the radioactive water and whatever. Like, they try to get some of that in there, but it's not just a, like, oh, yeah, we walked a long ways. Like, I don't know what it is that's missing, but it's how they tell the story that it doesn't feel epic. It feels very zoomed in on these characters, which is intentional. Like, they're doing that on purpose to give you these narratives about these characters. It's a very character-driven show. But part of the beauty of Fallout is the world and the environment. And while, again, I think they did a really good job of representing that, it doesn't become the star of the show in the way that it might have, could have been. And maybe it shouldn't be. Maybe that should be left to the games to do that side of it. But so, that was just one disconnect I felt.
The other real kind of issue that I had with that was that the vaults seemed really accessible.
Yeah.
Like Lucy gets out and she goes out and walks around and about halfway or two thirds through the show, like they walk into a hospital and end up in the vault. And I'm like, okay, the vaults weren't this accessible. Like that's what makes the games, is that you find your way out of your vault, and then there's this whole world, and I just, you're right, it's not big enough, and I made the mistake on the last show of talking about the fact that the show very obviously takes place in the Commonwealth. It doesn't. It takes place in California.
Yeah.
In not that far from New Vegas. But what they did was they took some things like the Super Duper Mart, what's another one that was very obviously a Commonwealth kind of. I had a list of stuff that, like, okay, they took that from Fallout 4, and you're very obviously in the Boston area, but you're not. It's the obvious, and they're talking about Shady Sam's and the New California Republic, and like it's a conglomeration of the Fallout games.
Yes.
And like, it's okay, but like, now that you've done this, if you wanted to go to the DC area, like, it would have to be like The Walking Dead. It would have to be a separate show at this point.
Yeah.
With all new characters, because the only people in the world that have the ability to go from what is essentially Southern California to DC would be the Brotherhood. That's hard, you know? Like, I like that they explained how super mutants and ghouls and some of that stuff happened, but you didn't ever see a super mutant. Which I can understand, because essentially what a super mutant is the Incredible Hulk, just more angry.
Yeah.
So
we didn't see super mutants. We didn't see a Deathclaw.
Right.
We get teases of both of those, because they kind of talk about the super mutants and that kind of stuff throughout the show. There is the skull of the Deathclaw that you see at the very end. And there's also a tease towards New Vegas. And so I think that's where we can expect season two to head, which is already confirmed that they're working on season two. So no big surprise there. It's been successful. That's a good thing. But just like, there's this, it feels like kind of a thing in video game shows sometimes to like try to save some of the fun stuff until like deeper seasons or whatever. And that's, you know, like, I get it, but also, like, I want to see a Deathclaw. Right. And, like, there's a balance to it, because, like, we talked about with Fallout 4, like, when you start Fallout 4, you run into a Deathclaw at the beginning of the game. It's like, oh, crap, like, what? This isn't how this is supposed to work. Like, there is a pacing thing that you need to do. But to have a Deathclaw show up near the end of the first season would have been super cool, and, like, a lot of fan service. And you know, having the skull there is a little bit more of an Easter eggy kind of fan service, but doesn't really like pay off and like, oh, ooh, cool, Deathclaw, you know, like thing that Fallout fans would have geeked out over. And so there's stuff like that that I understand why they did it, and kind of their long-term approach that I'm just like, I wish they would have approached it a little bit differently.
Of course, there's not. I didn't see a Murloc. You didn't get a Murloc. You got a creature that I've never seen in Fallout before. Really, I don't know what the dude's uncle is supposed to be.
Right.
You had an overseer with one eye. Like
that was
never
fun.
I've never seen that in Fallout. It was interesting. It did some things that I'm like, okay. I mean, you just sort of have to go, okay, this is not exactly what I want, but it's okay.
Yeah, and that's what I do appreciate is they didn't try to just retell the story of the video games in any specific way, because the story of the video games don't lend themselves to a TV show anyway. But that they did do something different, that they did approach it with a different mindset of like, okay, we're taking this world that is established. We're not changing it, but we're tweaking it just enough to make it accessible for people who aren't familiar with this world. And so like the Cyclops Overseer, you kind of go, okay, I get it. Like, it's this, you know, world with radiation and fallout, and there's going to be people that get jacked up because of this, but not all of the jacked up people necessarily are ghouls or super mutants or whatever. You know, like, what layers of jacked upness can we have in this world? And that's a different thing than we kind of see in the game, which is cool. Like, I get it, and I appreciate it, even though it's a little bit like, oh, I don't remember that.
Can we talk about the ghoul for a minute?
Uh-huh.
Because I think he's fabulous. You talked about on the previous show, Walton Goggins is fantastic. I'm watching The Shield right now with Chris. He has a major role in The Shield. I think that's kind of where he got started.
Yeah, I think so.
And he's still fabulous in the show. There are some things that I wish they would have explained. I spent the entire show trying to figure out which drug that he is taking to stay sane. And I think he's taking Jet, but it doesn't say that it's Jet, and he doesn't ever say why the Jet keeps him from turning. I thought that was interesting. I wish they would have expounded on that, because at this point he's like 200 years old and the Jet is apparently all that's keeping him from going feral.
Yeah.
I wish somebody would have talked about that a little bit, because they didn't ever bring that up in the game. Like, you just have these functional ghouls walking around that you can sort of talk to. It's a great character, but there's a lot of stuff that was not explained in a way. I thought at the beginning, maybe they put Rataway in an inhaler and he's keeping the radiation down. But it's not. It's got to be Jet or Psycho or something else, because they hooked Lucy up to some right away, which was in a bag, which I thoroughly enjoyed that they did that.
Yeah.
Like the games. And she had to take an IV. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
He's great. He's a really good actor. And I really appreciate what he did. And I think if you don't have that guy, this show doesn't work.
Yeah, he definitely brings a lot to it. And you got to have a solid character, and the ghoul makes for a solid character, a complicated character, one that you kind of both root for and root against, and like that just is a good execution. I grew to like Lucy as a character more show progressed. I didn't care for her a lot at the beginning, but her line, and I don't remember exactly what it is, but when she gives him like the stim packs, is like golden rule MF or whatever, MFing golden rule. Yeah. And like, that's like her character arc's like big transition, you know, like when she really shifts from like okie dokie to like kind of like fierce okie dokie because she still remains that kind of thing. But like, it was just such a great line and a moment in the show that was really fun.
I really like her.
Yeah.
I really like her. She made me laugh. It's she is the definition of what I think the Fallout main character in the games was meant to be if he had a voice.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it kind of that, how did I end up here? What's going on here? And then as you go along and see some crap, you turn into this sort of bad dude.
Yeah.
So I dug it. I really did.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is a good kind of representation of the typical Fallout protagonist story arc, which is great. Because, again, that's familiar. That's if you play the games. This is kind of how you understand this world working while still being new and fresh. So,
yeah.
All that said, they are working on a second season. So we will see more Fallout TV show coming. Again, no surprise there. This, though, transitioning into show notes from... Microsoft, Fallout 5 may be getting here a lot quicker than we anticipate. So, of course, we know Bethesda's working on Elder Scrolls 6, and that's the one that they've kind of announced. They haven't announced Fallout 5, but we know that it's in the works. But obviously, with the success of the TV show, with the fact that there's going to be more of the TV show happening, that the spike of interest in existing Fallout franchises, I've seen people I know playing Fallout 4 on Steam. I've seen my buddies that I grew up with that loved New Vegas are all back into New Vegas right now. Like, this has really regenerated a lot of love for Fallout, and the most recent Fallout game is approaching 10 years old, and so it's kind of due. And so the story is, the report here is that Microsoft is pushing Bethesda, obviously Bethesda's under the Microsoft umbrella now, to kind of fast track development on Fallout 5
That's a really bad idea.
The question is it shift focus from the Elder Scrolls and instead make Fallout 5 the next thing that's going to be released? Or is it, you know, like, put more people on the team, longer hour, whatever it is. And you're right. The worry here is, do we sacrifice the quality of the game trying to get it out to capitalize on the interest that exists right now? Obviously, it's not a game we're seeing for the next couple of years, unless they've done just massive amount of works behind the scene that we don't know about. And I think we would know about that level of work because they would want to tell us. But I would not be at all shocked. In fact, I would anticipate that this summer of gaming, whatever event that they choose to do this in, we will get a Fallout 5 teaser somewhere. And I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up releasing before Elder Scrolls 6.
So here's why this is bad. And I really hate being grumpy on this show. I really do. Because I'm excited about Fallout just like everybody else. I'm excited to put it back on my machine, get it up and running. And I was gonna do that last week, and then I read the story about how all of the quote unquote next generation updates are breaking modded saves and basically don't do anything else, right? Like I have a modded save. That's all I've got, a modded save. So now I'm like, well, if it's going to break my crap, I don't want to install Fallout 4 until they get that fixed.
Yeah,
because I'm running Fallout 4 with 26 mods. 26! Right? So if there's any chance that these new updates are going to break my game, I'm not doing that. I'm just not. Because I want to finish Fallout 4 at some point. And if I would, especially with this new system and setup that we have here, I'm thinking I could probably finish Fallout 4 pretty quick, because once I get back into it, that's it.
Yeah.
It's like Cyberpunk. That's all I'm playing until it's over. But I can't even consider putting it on my rig and getting it all set up if my saves are going to break.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
Yeah.
So that's a problem I have.
And that's been the history of Bethesda recently, not forever, but recently, like just to kind of put out buggy stuff, Fallout 76, which is also getting renewed interest right now, but was a hot mess when it launched. And like you said, these current gen updates came out buggy. That just is kind of nature of it. And so, yeah, don't screw it up. What you don't want to do is capitalize on this big fan interest you got and put out a crappy game, because that's going to tank your big fan interest really, really fast.
Yeah.
And in some ways, I would argue that the TV show has repaired in some ways the name of Fallout from Fallout 76 for a lot of us.
I was going to say that I think putting out any kind of game is a huge mistake, because the vast majority of gamers out there are not gamers like us. They want good visuals. They want good sound. They want the Call of Duty style situation that people get into. Call of Duty, Madden, Fortnite. Like, that's where we are. That's what the vast majority of gamers want to play. That's what they're excited about. While I was at Comic-Con, I found out that Emerald College, which is where I live, I don't know that you went there, but I went there, that they now have an esports team, and they were set up at the Yellow City Comic-Con, and I got to walk through that, and there was just a bunch of geeks sitting around with all these rigs. It was a massive LAN party, and they were playing Overwatch, right?
Yeah.
That's what the vast majority of people are playing. And Fallout, as much as we love it, has been very broken for a very long time. And we put up with it because we love it. But for the average person, if you put out the kind of product that Bethesda is known for, it's going to turn the average person off. Does that make sense?
Like, I could see an argument for that. I think it's more complex than that. But you definitely don't want to risk putting out something that is poor quality.
I'm not saying we don't love Bethesda. We do, but it goes back to what I've said for several weeks. We know what a Bethesda product is, and we know what the pros and cons of a Bethesda product are.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the thing is if you want to keep the momentum going, you've got to continue to put out stuff that's good, because the quickest way to scrap all this momentum and make nobody want to watch season two is you put out a really crappy game and everybody goes, oh, that world's not as fun as I thought it was. Now, I'm really curious, and we'll never get like good crosstabs on like the demographics of the audience of Fallout, the TV show, because it's on a streaming service and streaming services just don't do that stuff very much, put out lots of detailed information of who's watching shows. I would love to see, if it were ever possible, like, what kind of overlap there is between people who watch the show and played the games, are really, you know, into the games. I don't want to say fanatical per se, but like, you know, like serious about the games, played through multiple Fallout games as we have, versus people that are like, oh, this is interesting, and I know this is based off of a video game, but let me try it out, and I think it's kind of cool. Like, it just, that would also determine like what that like continued success looks like, because like The Last of Us has a huge audience of people that have never touched a game. I don't know that that's true about Fallout as a TV series. Like, The Last of Us had such crossover appeal, And to me, I don't get that sense from Fallout, the TV series. There's definitely some, and there's a lot of like wives that are watching or husbands that are watching. Let's say it goes the other way too, that their significant other played the game and they didn't, and that's great. But like, I don't see the same kind of cultural, like, you got to watch this even if you have no idea that this even was a video game thing happening with this, like it did with Last of Us.
And I think a lot of what is drawing people in is the way that it looks, because I don't mean to sell Dove totally out, but I sent him a text and I was like, I finished it, and he was like, dude, I have seen the first episode like 5 times because I can't get past how visually fabulous it looks. And like, I sit down and I watch it, and every time I watch it, I see something new. And I wanted to like call him and yell at him, like, dude, like, finish the show. I get that it looks fabulous, but like, I think that's what's drawing a lot of people, is the way that it looks.
Yeah.
And that 1950s sort of environment. I mean, it's interesting to me. It's why I love Fallout.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. 100%. The retro futuristic thing that is Fallout is so freaking cool. And I would even argue that they could have done it even more in the TV show. Like, it didn't feel like it quite lived up to what the game feel of the kind of retro futuristic
Once
thing is.
Once you got out of the vault, I think yes. they did a fabulous job with the vault, and the rest of it, I totally agree.
Yes, for sure. And the flashbacks are super cool. Even like the Walter Goggins character with the thumbs up, and how that turns into the like cartoon guy. And like, just that stuff was brilliant and cool and tied it all back together. But yeah, there's lost potential there, as there is with anything. And so, yeah, that said, we will probably hit it on it more, but going to be at least a year before we see more TV, at least a couple years, I would guess, hopefully, before we see another game in the Fallout series. So,
if anybody from Bethesda is listening, do not try and put Fallout 5 out in a year.
Yeah, because for sure.
That is a massive mistake.
Yeah, we need that thing to be freaking awesome. So that's it. I'm going to jump forward into show notes if you're following along at gamingandcensored.com because I did want to bring this story up, and it kind of tied into something you were just talking about. And so I'm just curious of your thoughts and kind of what you may have felt or seen on this. So first, let me preface that this is a story from Japan, and this Japanese gaming audience is different than the Western gaming audience, and always has been, and will continue to be, and that's just part of this conversation. And so take all of this with a grain of salt. That is, this is regionally based, but. There was a poll done of Japanese gamers of that are Gen Z, meaning that they are currently 15 to 24 years old. This is the generation right now that I am seeing come through college. And so I'm interacting with Gen Z on a pretty regular basis about their gaming habits and how they play games. And almost all of them, 94.7%, said they play games on mobile devices. No big shocker there, but I would think you would get a pretty similar result from Western audience too. Everybody plays games on their phone, and that's not just a Gen Z thing. But then there's a big drop off to the Nintendo Switch, which Nintendo, Japanese company, that's a little less than 40%. And then PC is under that at 33%. And then you keep going down the list. And on this list, at least, you don't see PlayStation 5 or Xbox Series X or S. And now, no surprise that the Xbox isn't on the list, because it's not a Japanese company, but Sony, of course, is, and PlayStation is a Japanese product, at least nominally speaking. Everything's globalized so much at this point that there's not the regional differences that there were when we were younger. But that said, it does show a shift in Japanese Gen Z gamers away from kind of our traditional console approach. I don't feel that, again, my evidence here is anecdotal. My evidence is not scientific, like this poll theoretically is. But I don't feel that with my students who I know play a lot of games on PlayStation specifically, and the ones I've talked to, and on Switch. But the way that I do think this is interesting is the kind of games that we play and the kind of platforms that we play on, namely consoles and high-end PCs, feels like it's something that's for old guys now, right?
Right.
Like, I feel like gaming for old guys is like consoles and PCs, even though I obviously play a ton on mobile, but I don't play like competitive games on mobile. I don't play like real serious games on mobile. And I think that may be the disconnect, that there are a lot of younger Gen Z age people that play more competitive games on mobile, which I just can't do. Like, I don't have the dexterity for that. That's crazy stuff on a mobile device. But I think that there is a lot of that that's happening there. And I'm curious if this trend continues, how long until we start seeing us as a demographic getting kind of knocked out of this world of gaming in the way that we are used to gaming.
It's already happening. And I will tell you that as part of my, what I do every day with the virtual world environments, different places, trying to get people involved in using the virtual worlds has been really hard for the last 5 years, because if it doesn't run on your phone, the next step that a person has is a 10-year-old laptop that does not have the processing required to do what you needed to do, even to run a virtual world or something in a browser. And if you talk to them about, well, do you have a PC? They're like, yeah, I have an HP with 8 gigs of RAM sitting over there, but I haven't used it in 15 years. And that's something that I've been dealing with for the last 5 years. And I don't understand. And the people that I work with don't understand, because we all use desktops and we also all use phones and handhelds and various things. But currently, there is a massive group of people out there that if it doesn't run on your phone or run on a Switch, they don't know that it exists. Like, we can have that. We can have the discussion about local reality and what's real and what's not. But seriously, if it doesn't run on a phone or a Nintendo Switch, They don't know. And you and I have talked about on previous shows the amount of learning that your students specifically don't have, as far as the Swiss Army knife of, okay, I know how to use a PC. I also know how to use a Mac. If I had to, I could put Linux on a hard drive and figure out how to do some stuff from command line. Like, you and I have the skill set to kind of do the Swiss Army knife thing, which I am very proud of. I know you are too, to walk into a situation involving tech and somebody hand it to us and go, I don't know why it's not working. We can figure it out. There are two or three or maybe even four generations of people that don't have a clue how to do that. We had to. We had no choice. Now, if it's not on a phone or on a streaming service, people get lost. And so I believe this is 1,000% true, and I'm just wondering how much longer it's going to be before NVIDIA says, we're not selling enough hardware here, we're out of PCs, And when they're out of PCs, it's over. Like,
so to push back a little bit, not overall, you're I think pretty spot on, but with NVIDIA specifically, NVIDIA I think is set up great for where we're going, because, and I think, like, short term, long term, like when we look at Microsoft's position in the industry right now, we kind of go, they're kind of struggling in the hardware sales. There's no reason to go buy an Xbox Series X. By the way, Chad did text me to let me know he has an Xbox. And so we do know somebody who has an Xbox thanks to Chad. So we appreciate that.
My response to him was, of course you do.
Right. So do dig that. But all that said, Microsoft, in a lot of ways, is really well positioned for where the future is going, because they're really shifting towards service-based, streaming-focused, that kind of stuff, which is ultimately like what we're going to get to. Whether or not the games feel the same way that they do right now, the future is not in dedicated pieces of hardware that are going to be running your games. Just like you don't, for the most part, have a dedicated DVD player or Blu-ray player in your house anymore. I don't have one. I haven't had one for a long, long time. Because the way that we consume this kind of media is going to shift. And we're in the middle of that. The type of content that gets created for that, I don't know where it's going. And that's where I'm really curious, because I don't know if it's a platform thing or if it's a content thing or if it's a combination of those things, because platform dictates what your content is in some ways. You can't develop a game for a mobile device the same way you develop a game for a PC or a console. You can't develop a game for a PC the same way you develop it for a console. Like, there's just so many little caveats in here that the future of how those games look, I don't know. But the hardware that it's going to be running off of, NVIDIA is going to be right there. NVIDIA is gangbusters right now with all of the processing power that's needed for AI and for advanced graphics and all this kind of stuff. Like, that's the future, is going to be these massive server farms that are generating all this content and spitting it out to you.
Okay, so let me reiterate. Maybe I didn't make myself clear. When they decide that they are out of the quote unquote PC business,
gotcha.
PCs are dead.
Right.
when they decide, okay, we're going to the server farm, and all you need is a terminal, a keyboard, a mouse, and a monitor.
Yep.
Like PCs are dead. And when that happens, I don't know how people like you and me are going to function, because I have, and I know you have too, you've done a lot of stuff on the cloud, and I don't even have a word processor on either machine at this point, because right. You don't need it. Like,
yep.
If you want to do something, you go to Google or whatever. But my point is because things are cloud-based, and I'm going to go back to the virtual world example for a second. If you go to a 3D web-based browser world, and I'll just take 3D web worlds for example, because I work on that, depending on what kind of hardware a person has, when they log in, they may have some issue, and I can't tell you what the issue would be. Maybe their voice doesn't work because they don't have the mic plugged in right. Maybe it doesn't load as fast as it should because they don't have enough RAM. Maybe, like, there's a zillion different reasons why this stuff is hard, and every time that the average person logs in, they have some sort of an issue, and it's been really hard to find a way to sell these platforms, because people are so accustomed to, well, if it's on my phone, it just works.
Right.
And there's an app for that. And like you and I like techie stuff. You and I like trying to figure out how to make things work. You and I like building machines. And I think there's a large group of people out there that are like us. And I don't know when it comes to the idea of somebody like NVIDIA saying, okay, we're going to stream it all to you and all you need is a terminal. I think that's going to be a disaster because, like I said, I've worked in it for the last 5 years and there's always some kind of bug, right? Like, there's always some kind of something that unless you have a top-end setup, for the average person, something is not going to work.
For
and
sure.
I can take GeForce Now, for example. GeForce Now is great. If you're in a situation where you don't have a setup and you just want to play some games, like, it's great. But to expect it to run flawlessly, even on a gigabit connection, that doesn't happen. It doesn't ever. So I am scared of that.
What? For sure. And there's always going to be a tech adjustment. And we're going to sacrifice in certain places for convenience, which is the kind of the way technical progression works. And then it'll catch up in some level. But there's always that kind of push and pull of convenience versus quality in how we connect with these things.
I mean, can you imagine, and this is a great example, because you played a huge chunk of Cyberpunk on the cloud.
Yeah.
And that's part of my desire to build this room that I'm sitting in, because you played many, 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 many hours of Cyberpunk on the cloud, and it was great. You enjoyed it. But one of the first things that I will remember you telling me is, I like it until I get into a car. And then it gets really sketchy. I cannot wait for you to get here, for me to fire up Cyberpunk, to put it on the big screen, for you to plug in the controller, to see all the stuff, and to feel it and go, this is the coolest thing ever. I can't wait, because now we have the physical hardware. And I say again, playing Cyberpunk on the cloud is great, but playing it on some actual hardware with a big screen is way better.
Sure, but 95% of people aren't going to have that rig.
Yeah.
And that's
like I said, that's where I've lived for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And it's an awful place to be, because for you and me and for a lot of people like us, we have the rigs because we want the rigs. This is our hobby. And when somebody tells me they don't have the rig, I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Like, and they're like, well, it's too expensive. And I'm like, no, it's not. Like, I at this point, you can build a really nice computer for $1,200-$1,500 that will last you a really long time. And your pushback to that is going to be, well, it's still too expensive. Folks, the vast majority of you out there routinely spend $1,000 every 2 years on a phone. I don't want to hear that. I mean, like, am I wrong?
It's a different thing. I'm not going to argue with you about the how people spend money. But I mean, people aren't going to spend that money. You can't convince them to. It's just not going to happen. Like, that's the reality of where things are. This is where the industry is going. And like I said, I think Microsoft's actually pretty well situated for what that looks like in 10 years, probably a lot better than Sony. Nintendo's such a weird case. I don't have any clue what they're going to look like in 10
years.
They
don't care.
They could be like killing it. They could be back to the Wii U era. I have no idea what Nintendo looks like, but like out of Microsoft and Sony, who looks better in the next 2 or 3 years? Sony does.
Yeah.
Who looks better 10 years from now? I would probably put my money on Microsoft. And Sony could obviously catch up and do other things. And there's a bunch of other, caveats with all of that. But all things remaining the same right now, Microsoft seems to have a little bit more of a focus on where we're going as an industry, where Sony has a little bit more of a focus of where we're at right now as an industry. And neither one of them is going to be capturing a big chunk of audience on consoles in the near future, and they're going to have to figure out other ways to get that audience if they're going to remain relative in the gaming space. And that's where software development becomes such a big part of what they do. Why we see both of them going multi-platform for all their stuff, that's going to continue as well.
One more thing. I know we got to go. I know we're out of time, but the caveat that I will say that, and this goes into the phone discussion as well. There are more people right now today that have handhelds that are playing games on their handhelds than there have ever been in their lives. There's people that have one or two handhelds but don't have a console in their house.
Sure.
They have a Switch and or a Steam Deck, but they don't have a console or a PC in their house. Handhelds are huge because it's a whole lot like a laptop. Like, everybody that I talk to, if somebody comes to me and says, I need a new computer, and the first thing I say to them is, what do you want it to do? And they go, well, I want a laptop. Every single person I talk to says, well, I want a laptop. And I'm going, why? And they're, well, I can put it on the couch, and I can do this, I can go with it. And you know what happens to anybody that buys a laptop? They take it in their house, they plug it in, it doesn't move. And what they don't understand is that if you're willing to not buy a laptop, you are going to get way more bang for your buck when you're putting together a computer. It doesn't matter if you buy it off a shelf or where you get it. You get way more bang for your buck. But everybody wants that convenience. Everybody wants the option to take it. Most of them don't ever take it. It gets plugged in, put it on a desk, and then they come back to me 2 years later and go, why won't the battery charge? And the answer is because you have not taken it anywhere. And so what you said, just to wrap this up, convenience is king. People want the option to take whatever they're doing on the go. And at least in my mind, and you're different because you live a different lifestyle and you do a bunch of stuff all at once. But in my mind, I don't want to do anything on the go. Like, my hands don't work well enough for me to play a game on my phone. Okay? My hands don't work well enough to use the Switch. And that's just my personal lifestyle in this chair that I sit in.
Sure.
I think you would be the opposite and say, I do a crap ton of stuff on my phone.
Sure.
And so it's very interesting to me that you're some of both camps.
For sure. Yeah. And I think that that will persist too. There's always going to be that overlap that exists by sheer necessity. Yeah. That, like, it just has to some certain level.
So, yeah.
All that said, a couple of really super fast things from the show notes just to go by gamingcensor.com. BlizzCon canceled this year. No big surprise there, but just it is the era of change and how like things used to work. There's a trailer in the show notes for a game called Tales of the Shire, which is a Lord of the Rings game, but it's like Stardew Valley in the Shire. Like, it's like a life sim with hobbits.
That's awesome.
Yeah, which is, it's like, I'm so pumped about it. And it, not surprising, but a continued sad, ridiculous layoff news for 2024. Take-Two laying off 5% of its employees by the end of the year, which is about 600 people. Just continues to suck. But, you know, it's kind of where we're at. No big new releases. Stellar Blade, which is getting a lot of discussion because of whether or not it should be censored or uncensored in Japan is part of it. And boob physics and that kind of stuff is apparently a big thing here. I don't know much about it, but I just keep seeing it pop up on Twitter. And it's like, why? I don't. Anyway, it's its own thing. And if that's something that you're into, let us know, because that's outside of our world. The other one I will mention that's on Game Pass, which I didn't realize it's coming to Game Pass, which is pretty cool, is Iuden Chronicle. Again, I'm not entirely sure pronunciation there. Iuden Chronicle 100 Heroes. This is the franchise game from the guy who did oh my goodness, I just had the name and it just blanked.
We're getting old.
Shining Force, right? Shining Force, from the Sega Genesis days, where you had these the RPG with like 100 different player characters that you could put in your party and that kind of stuff, which was super cool. Great franchise back in the day. This is kind of the spiritual successor to that. So for the old school nerds like us, it scratches a specific itch. So out on Game Pass, which is pretty cool.
Just real quick, speaking of old school nerds like us, I don't know if you've seen the ads for Shogun on FX.
Yeah.
Talking about apparently TV very good shows. Apparently it's very good. I'm going to sit down and watch it now that I have a nice room to sit down and watch it in. I'm looking forward to that. That old school stuff is always good. I just hope they don't screw it up.
Yeah. Apparently it's very good. Hopeful that it actually is, but everything I've heard is it's very good. So
yeah.
That's a good thing. So yeah. Otherwise.
I'm so excited to be able to look forward to what's coming this summer, because we got a lot of great stuff for you guys. So I will reiterate what he said at the very beginning of the show. If you are out there and we have not heard from you, we want to hear from you. We want to know who's out there. We want to know what you're playing. We want to know what you're doing. Because if we're not talking about it, we need you to talk about it. So if you want to get involved with this show, there's no better time to get involved with this show. And one of the best ways to do that is call the voicemail line at
509-GAME-210.
Just call it, talk about whatever you want to, and we'll put it together and we'll play it on the show. You can also email us. You can also join us on the Facebook page. We are on the Twitter/X. Nobody knows what to call it at this point. No. Elon, can we get a better name, please, yeah, sir? I'm just asking, please. Otherwise, I think that's about it. We've got a lot of really cool content coming in the next several weeks, I hope. If you have noticed, or maybe you have not, I have tried really hard to pick it up on the social media and post some things and let you guys know what's going on around here. So watch the social medias and let us know what it is that you would like to see, because now we have lots and lots of options to put stuff on. So please let us know what you would like to see. Other than that, is there anything else, sir?
I think we're good.
All right, I'm Jamie, that's Tommy, and for one more week we are Gaming Uncensored, and we are out.
Would you like to submit a segment for this show? Send it to gamingandcensored@gmail.com. And don't worry, we'll play just about anything. Gaming Uncensored.